Thanks to Curex for its longtime support of AMR. Whether it's running, hiking, biking, court sports, golf, and even on your feet all day jobs, Curex insoles can help you live a healthy and active lifestyle. For 15% off, visit Curex.com and use code AMR15. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar. Start each day right with IQ Bar's brain and body boosting bars and mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all types of their products. Get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. Just text AMR to 64000. You probably tuned in for AMR Answers, but surprise! Instead, we're serving up a special standalone episode hosted by coaches Liz Waterstrott and Jennifer Harrison. The topic? Triathlons and when to step up to certain distances, as in when to consider your first try, when to move up from a sprint to Olympic distance, when to consider 70.3 distance, and if you're ready to take on an Ironman triathlon. Both women should be familiar voices to you. Liz is a frequent co-host of the Another Mother Runner podcast on Fridays, and Jen is a frequent guest on that show. Both women are well-respected, longtime multi-sport coaches in the Chicagoland area. They're also both successful, well-honed triathletes, each having competed in more than 200 triathlon races, including numerous Ironman events. Coaches Liz and Jen also coach all of our heart rate training and triathlon programs in our Train Like a Mother Club. Liz is the mother of three school-age kids who are going to be home any moment, while Jen has twins who are in college. And now I'm going to turn things over to Liz and Jen. After you listen, please let us know your thoughts about this special episode on Instagram. Enjoy.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi. So my microphone's off a little bit, so Elizabeth is staring at my nose this entire time.
Well, I feel like mom and dad went out of town and they left us in the house alone and just said, just don't go to jail. Don't get pregnant. empty the ashtrays.
I'm kind of excited about this opportunity. I've never been let off the leash before.
Well, it's just us. And today we are here to talk about one of our favorite things, which is triathlon. So we are going to rewind back several decades.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. And we're going to take it back to the beginning, to the first start line that we ever stepped up to. And so, Jennifer, let's start with you. Take us back. What got you into your first triathlon?
Oh, goodness. Okay. So I did a relay as my first triathlon in college with my sister and my hungover boyfriend at the time. And it was a sorority fraternity challenge. I was, even in those days, in it to be like, oh, we got this. We got this. And we had never done it before. And I did the run, which to me, I can't believe I did the run. My sister did the bike and my boyfriend did the swim. And it was a hot mess. We were overserved and it was in the morning. So we didn't sleep. We were overserved. It was 117 degrees in the shade and we were like a comedy of errors. Like we did not pee. We were laughing. It was just a mess. So that was my first like introduction into triathlon. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, these older people, keep in mind, they were probably in their 30s. These old people are doing the whole thing. I was mesmerized and freaked out 100% by the entire thing. But we had a really good time. But at that point, did not like ignite that switch for me. I was just kind of like, oh, okay, this is fun. I had a good time. I can't remember how we did. It doesn't matter, but I think we did well enough where I was like, okay. Fast forward. That was, and you want to hear the year that was? It was 93, if anybody's listening. Okay. So then fast forward a couple of years, I met my current husband, Jerome, and he was doing triathlon. And he's like, why don't you do triathlon? You swam your whole life. You've run. I mean, how hard can biking be? Right? That's what he says. And I'm like, okay. So I literally borrowed my sister's bike, never really rode it, which is always a really good thing when you're starting to do a triathlon. I really wasn't quite sure how to shift or brake for that matter. I had running shoes on, which by the way is totally okay. But you know, the people that are experienced or have bike shoes on. And I did it at my local suburb where I grew up, a local triathlon with a pool swim and a bike and a run. And I had the best time. And then that was it. I was hooked. And I know that your story is even much more hilarious because you didn't even have a real bike, right? Didn't you borrow your boyfriend's mountain bike or something?
I did. Yeah, I did not have a very illustrious beginning to the sport. I was, you know, not a remarkable athlete in high school. I didn't really know how to swim. And I got out of college and I was just what I would call a gym rat. I went to the gym every day. I worked out for 90 minutes. So I had the endurance, I suppose, but I don't remember what struck me. I just saw that there was a women's triathlon in my hometown and I thought I should do that. And so I went to the front desk of the gym, which is where you should always look for a coach. And I said, do you have someone who can help me train for this triathlon? And they gave me Sue Welker. Anyone living in this area knows Sue Welker. Legend. They gave me her name and she helped me train for this triathlon. And I'll never forget her writing out with paper and pencil a schedule for what I should do every day. And granted, this was like 8 weeks before the race was actually going to happen. So it probably didn't matter what I did at that point. She taught me how to swim and I did the Danskin Women's Triathlon. I knew how to swim at that point. I had gotten through 800 meters in the pool that week of the race. And then I did not swim an inch of that swim. I think it was at a place where you could walk some of it. So I think I walked and breaststroked the rest. I was on a boyfriend's mountain bike, which I enjoyed that part. And then I had always been a runner, but I didn't run very fast. Like you, I don't remember what my time was. I don't remember how I finished. I just remembered that I really enjoyed it. And there was something about it. I caught the bug and I would say the rest from there was history. I've spent a lot of time, a lot of miles, and a lot of money since then on the sport.
So after your first triathlon, what steps did you take to kind of start the path of getting into triathlon? Because you were a total beginner, where I was too, but I was running marathons and racing. So my entry was a little different. So what did you do to get started?
Well, I actually started looking around our local communities to see if there was anyone else who did triathlons. And I found a wonderful training group. We were called Rocket Dog Racing. And this was just a group of people who got together and started a master swim team, met at the local collegiate track. And we did a track workout maybe once a week. And then we rode together on the weekends. And so I think, you know, having that community was really nice because a lot of those people, they had already done Ironmans. They had raced for a long time. So they really kind of taught me the ropes and they just taught me the etiquette and the type of training I needed to do to improve in the sport and improve my skills. So I started with finding a community.
Yeah. And I think that kind of like leads into what got us excited about triathlon and what got us into this sport was from the running background, because we both grew up running and then I ran marathons and all that. And I was kind of getting just, I don't want to say bored, but just a little bit stale with the running. I had kind of felt like I was doing 5Ks and 10Ks and I had all these goals. And for me, it was a little bit easier because it was a single sport and I really, to be honest with you, didn't like biking. So I was like, this works great for me. It's a single sport. I can have these goals. I'm going to meet these goals. But then I just felt once I met some of these goals, like in a 5K was to break a certain time. In the marathon, I took a year off triathlon and chased a time in marathon racing. And some of the goals I hit and some of them I did not hit. And the thing with running that broke my heart was that it was so dependent sometimes on weather. And it was so dependent on, well, weather. And I just, you know, you'd show up for a marathon and it was, you know, I'll never forget Chicago in 2010. We showed up, great shape. We killed ourselves, a whole group of us. And we woke up and it was like 72 degrees and there was condensation on all the windows. And we all know how can't really run super fast and that kind of stuff. So that stuff would kind of break my heart. And I just felt like, okay, I need to do something different where, sure, weather's always an issue and weather's always challenging, but it's not going to hurt every single time I do it. And triathlon is just so much more forgiving in that arena.
Yeah, I agree. Coming from a running background as well, you know, I felt like I had done what I wanted to do in running and it was time for a new challenge. And, you know, running over time, my hamstrings would get sore. You were always kind of on that edge. And so I felt like maybe a little more diversity in what I was doing would help me not only, you know, stay consistent, but also help my running. And honestly, that's what happened over the years was my running improved as I got in more cross training and I got stronger. So Jen, after you did that first triathlon, did you kind of go crazy? Because I know the limiting factor for a lot of people in getting into the sport is they think that you need special gear or a fancy bike. I mean, we both kind of confessed that we were just using some sort of random bicycle for our first race. When was the point where you started investing in more equipment as you stepped up into the sport?
I think I started it. You're absolutely right. First of all, when I first started doing triathlons, I just wore a bathing suit and raced the entire race in a bathing suit. I almost like appalled to say that right now. I still have pictures of me in a bathing suit. Granted, I was in my 20s, so it was fine. But I look back and I'm like, oh my God, my crotch. Like, how did I mean, I don't even know how I managed that whole situation. But anyway, so I just really got excited about it because every single race was really different. Every single race had a different challenge. Like sometimes the bike was hilly, sometimes the run was hilly, sometimes, and I was petrified. So I should probably say this too. One of the reasons I didn't start triathlon right away, and I actually started doing duathlons after my initial triathlon, I started just competing in duathlons. One, because my boyfriend, now husband, was doing that. But two, I was actually afraid of open water. Even though I grew up swimming, it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, I still was a pool swimmer. And to transition from the pool to open water to me was, I mean, I'm of the Jaws generation, so I can't go into open water without being absolutely petrified of what's in there. And there are still times to this day where I will go into open water and all I can think about is Jaws. And obviously Jaws is not going to attack us in our little lakes in Illinois, but I still have those real legit fears that I don't think will ever go away. And so I just had to get over that and kind of process that. And those were some of my trepidations when I started. I didn't have a bike. I didn't like to bike. I didn't know how to eat and drink properly to get through this. And I was afraid of the open water. And so I started in duathlons, which is a run, bike, run. And finally I had people tell me, you know, you got to stop this. You are a good swimmer. You need to kind of suck it up and get over it. And it was just kind of the kick in the pants I needed.
Mm. Well, I, you know, like I said, I didn't really know how to swim and I didn't swim my first triathlon, and each triathlon from there got a little better with the swimming. But I knew I was serious when I wanted to buy a fancy bike. And everyone in the little training group that I was part of said, you have to reach out to this guy named Chris Waterstrat because he knows bikes. So that's really how I met Chris, was because I was looking for a bike. We also swam together at Masters. But that's when I knew that I was on to something. You know, I was willing to invest, probably at that time, it had to be almost $2,000, because there were not a lot of bikes out there. So they really marked them up. And I got myself a Cervelo bike. And that's how I really knew that I was ready to step up and take it to the next level. So Jennifer, you've already said that after your first triathlon, you know, there was kind of some time and then you did another triathlon and then you did some duathlons. What about, was there a period of time where you remember you did a sprint and then you were ready to move up to Olympic?
Yeah, I think I started with sprints. Well, I should say obviously, because sometimes now people don't start with sprints, but I'm your textbook kind of rule follower. That's just my personality. So I did the sprint and then I did the Olympic, then I did the half Ironman, then I did the full Ironman. And I think it was just a matter of being challenged. I did the sprint. I felt like I did well at the sprint, and well is whatever. I don't remember my definition of well back in those days, but it was just finishing, feeling good, having a good time. For someone like me, it was being with my friends and then doing well in the triathlon. I don't remember if I placed. I don't remember times. It doesn't matter. But I remember like, oh, I can do that again. Holy cow, I've got to double that whole distance in order to do that again. And that was scary for me, to be honest, from you, not from the run standpoint, but A, being in the open water longer, and B, riding my bike longer and trying to figure out how to eat. Because in a sprint distance triathlon, you can kind of get away with not eating or drinking, and kind of. But then in the Olympic, I was like, well, how do I carry my water? How do I carry, you know, this is in the 90s. We weren't rolling with watches and rolling with, fancy dancy drinks. So that's kind of how I just knew. I just wanted a different challenge. And I stepped up to the Olympic. I don't remember my first Olympic distance race, though. I do remember my first half Ironman, but I don't remember my and Ironman, but not my first Olympic. What about you? How did you know that it was time to step up?
Like I said, I just kind of did whatever the community that I was with did. And so everyone seemed to race the same circuit of races, which most of them were in Michigan. And they were all different distances. And a lot of them had really long swims up front, which, you know, would create a lot of chatter amongst the community. But because this community also started a master swim program, they were actually really good swimmers. So it was probably the right group to be around early on. These were not people that were necessarily afraid of the swim. I remember there was a race called Iron Horse in Springfield. It was a 1.5 mile swim, which is a long swim. You know, that's much longer than Olympics. So we did that. We did the Seahorse Challenge, which had almost a 2 mile swim up front. So I just kind of jumped around to all those different distances just based on what everyone was doing, because I knew the party was going there and we just have fun. But I remember my first half Ironman. I maybe did that, maybe 2 years into the sport. And I don't know what possessed me. I just said, I'm ready for a half Ironman. So I decided to do probably what was one of the hardest half Ironmans in the Midwest, but if not the whole country. It was called the Mohican Pine Man.
Oh, God.
It was in Ohio. And here's a newsflash. Ohio is not flat when you get into the Mohican country. It was so hilly. But that wasn't the worst part. We get into the water, and this race had become affectionately known as Fog Man because the whole swim was engulfed in fog. And back then, they did not cancel the swim because it was too anything. So the fact that you could not see buoys, you didn't know you were at the end until you almost ran into a boat. And so it was also 32 degrees at the start of this race. And I'm out there in a two-piece swimsuit because that is how we raced in 2001. And I get onto the bike, and again, super hilly. So what goes up also goes down. I'm freezing because I'm out there in basically half naked. I'm trying to eat the power bars that we would attach to our top tube, but those were frozen, so they wouldn't even peel off of my top tube. So I was so cold. I stopped on the course in the middle of what felt like the woods.
Oh, God.
And I knock on this person's door and I said two things. I said, one, I need to use the bathroom.
You knocked on someone's door?
I knocked on someone's door in the middle of the race. I said, I need to use the bathroom because at that point, my stomach had dropped so many times from getting scared on the descents that I like pretty much had to poop myself. So I used the bathroom and then I said, do you have a jacket or gloves? I'm really cold. I want you to just imagine you live in the woods.
No.
And this 20 something woman arrives at your front door in a swimsuit, like chattering, desperate for the bathroom. So they give me this windbreaker and garden gloves. And I'll never forget, they were at the top of this giant hill. And I just get back on my bike. I look down at this hill and I'm just like, what am I doing here? But I made it alive. I did the run. I ran really fast. I don't know how. I somehow finished third overall. It ends up in a magazine. The results were printed in a magazine. So that was my introduction into half Ironman. And there had to only be maybe 50 people who did this race. So it was not glamorous, but it was such an adventure. And I think that's why I really liked that distance, because it was more than just go as fast as you can. It was let's have an adventure. Let's push ourselves. Let's see what we're made of today. And I loved it. I started doing half Ironmans once or twice a year from there.
Yeah. And you know, that's the fun thing. I think that's part of the other thing too, is when I first did my first triathlon, well, relay in 93. And then I didn't do my first half until 2003, I want to say. So I had the twins in 02. So I think a year after that, I think I did it a year after that. And I'll never forget the announcer, Jerry from up in Minnesota. I finished and I had done really well. And he goes, I just kind of thought you'd go much faster than that. And I go, Jerry, that was my first half Ironman. And he was like, oh, really? Because I had been around for so long and never made the step up to long distance racing because I liked short distance racing. And with long course racing, you actually have to think. You have to have your food. And it's long. It's a long time to be on the bike. It's a long time to train. And it's just a big step. So before we talk about the Ironman and that transition to the Ironman, let's talk about how do you know, well, one, how do you know when it's the right time to step up? And what are some of the big challenges as we move distances? Do you know what I mean? From an equipment standpoint too.
Well, I think one of the things that you're hearing through our storytelling is there doesn't have to be a right time. There doesn't have to be a certain number of races you have under your race belt, a certain bike you have in your basement, you know, a certain speed that you've run before. I think if you have the interest, the motivation, and you're just ready for something different and you want a new challenge and you're motivated, just go for it, especially up to the half Ironman distance. And I know that's probably a little controversial to say because people think, well, you should step up and you should be properly prepared. As long as you give yourself something like 6 months for a half Ironman, maybe, you know, 4 to 6 months for an Olympic, 2 to 4 months for a sprint, you have plenty of time to prepare. Now, on the other side of that, you have to go in with realistic expectations. So are you going to be as fast as possible? Are you going to be, you know, winning your age group? Unlikely, but will you be prepared enough to get yourself across the line while enjoying yourself along the way? 100%. What do you think, Jen?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think sometimes we tend to, one, either jump into things too soon, or number two, the complete opposite, and drag our feet because we're afraid and fear holds us back. And I think we're just here to say, listen, we jumped into this triathlon. I know that where Elizabeth and I are now, with, you know, all the hundreds of triathlons that we've done and Ironmans that we've done and all that, we make it sound sometimes too easy, but I think we just need to say, and it needs to be said, that it's not that hard. It's only hard from a time management standpoint. And if you get some direction on, which we'll talk about here in a second, some direction on how to get started with equipment and what's really important and what's not important. And then, as long as you're all in and your village that surrounds you is all in your endeavors, then you'll be more than fine. I mean, in all distances, sprint all the way up to the Ironman. Because the longer stuff creates a little bit of a life change. But Elizabeth and I have done it with little kids. I mean, my twins were 2 when I did my first Ironman, which we'll talk about later. So Elizabeth, let's talk a little bit about equipment, because I think sometimes some of the hesitation is just the equipment. So let's talk about maybe the top 3 things that we think you guys need to have in order to get started in triathlon.
Okay. Well, if I had to come up with the top 3 most basic things you need to do a triathlon, 1, you need a good pair of goggles. And I know that sounds silly, but you need a proper pair of swimming goggles that don't leak, that fit you, that are new. You don't want to be pulling out your goggles from spring break, you know, 1999. Get yourself a new pair of goggles. Typically, you can get a good pair of goggles under $20, any major retailer or online. The second thing is a bike. And it doesn't have to be a fancy bike. It just has to be a bike that has been, let's say, recently serviced. So you've got an old clunker in your garage. Great. Take it to the local bike shop, make an appointment, take it in, get it serviced, get it cleaned up, and it's fine. And 3, a pair of running shoes. And that's it. Goggles cover you on the swim, bike so you can ride it, running shoes so you can do the miles. Jen, let's say somebody wants to take it like next step up from there, what are 2 to 3 things that they would consider beyond that?
Number one, swim lessons, or just somebody that has experience in the pool and or open water that you can have look at you either live or video. Obviously, live is preferable, and there's usually some local triathlon coach in your area, swim coach, USSM master swim coach in your area that you can look up. So definitely swim lessons, because I think a lot of time and a lot of tears are spent in the swimming pool. So that's it. The other thing too is look to see if your area does local swim clinics. Elizabeth and I both do them here in our area, in our respective areas, and they are worth every single, you know, time and penny that you guys are going to spend to get there and to register for that. The other thing that I would do if you're starting to get a little bit more serious is number two, get a bike fit. It doesn't need to be a $500 bike fit. Just go to your local bike shop and have them look at your bike fit just to make sure that you're not rocking your hips, you're too high, you're too low, just some general bike information. So those would be the top two for me.
And you know what we forgot? You need a helmet, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, it needs to be a bicycling helmet. So not a ski helmet, not a skateboarding helmet, not a snowboarding helmet. It needs to be a bicycle helmet. And any local bike shop, any major sporting retailer should be able to help you get a helmet. And here's something for those of you that are thinking of getting the clunker out of the garage and you had a helmet from many years ago, those helmets do expire. So it's worth it to always replace your helmet. I think I would say every 3 to 5 years. Most helmets nowadays have an expiration date on the inside of them. So make sure you're on top of that.
Well, yeah. And make sure that when you do your first couple triathlons, you look at the helmet and figure out which side is the front and the back. Because when I was doing my first couple triathlons, I put the helmet on the backwards. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yes. We've all been, I have pictures.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been that person. I was that person who was in transition brushing my hair and putting
I thought you were going to say brushing your teeth, because that would be very you.
Oh, I've seen that too. You had a friend who would do that in races. He would brush his teeth because he didn't like the feeling of the sports drink.
Yes, I did. Yes, I've got lots of very, very good stories about transition areas.
All right, it's time for a short break to hear from some supporting sponsors. Stay with us. Thanks to Curex for its continued support. For 15% off Curex insoles, visit Curex.com and use code AMR15. Curex insoles provide flexible support with an ideal level of rigidity. Since discovering Curex insoles several years ago, I haven't taken an athletic step without being supported by Curex insoles, especially now that I'm increasing my mileage with an eye on a fall race. With Curex's patented dynamic arch technology, Curex insoles properly support the foot and its natural movement for ideal ankle, knee, and hip alignment. This means the kinetic chain from feet to head functions like it should. That's why I immediately swap out the insoles in my running shoes and replace them with Curex Run Pro insoles. Same with the new pair of pickleball shoes I just got. Out go the cheap insoles they came with, and in go the all-new Curex Pickleball Pro insoles. The list of sport-specific insoles Curex makes is long. In addition to the two I just mentioned, Curex makes insoles for hiking, walking, soccer, golf, tennis, hockey, skiing, and more. Plus one specific for work shoes for on-your-feet all-day occupations. All available in high, medium, and low arch profiles. Feel the Curex difference and try Curex risk-free today. The company offers a 60-day warranty, even if the product has been cut to fit your shoes. Visit Curex.com and use code AMR15 for 15% off a pair of Curex insoles. That's Curex.com with code AMR15 for 15% off. Curex.com and that code AMR15. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar. Now get 20% off every IQ Bar product, plus free shipping when you text AMR to 64000. Power up your life with superior brain and body nutrition products from IQ Bar. Their plant protein bars are the perfect low-carb, grab-and-go breakfast, and their IQ Joe mushroom coffees are packed with magnesium and lion's mane adaptogen to keep you focused all day long. More than 10,000 five-star reviews and counting. Lately, to fuel my morning run, swim, or pickleball session, I've been enjoying an IQ Bar. There are 8 tasty flavors to choose from. My current favorite is almond butter chip. I especially love that the chips are dark chocolate. Mmm! At about 170 calories per bar, these plant protein bars keep me feeling strong my whole workout. Start each day right with IQ Bars brain and body boosting bars and their mushroom coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all types of their products. Get 7 IQ Bar flavors, 4 IQ Mix flavors, and 4 IQ Joe flavors. And today, our listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus free shipping. Just text AMR to 64000. Again, to get 20% off plus free shipping, just text the letters AMR to 64000. That's AMR to 64000.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the things that kind of threw you off when we started triathlon. Like maybe let's talk a little bit about, before we ultimately get to the Ironman, some of the fears. Like what were your couple fears? Because I had plenty of fears. What were some of your fears when you started doing triathlon and moving up?
Oh, goodness. That's a great question. So I think one of my biggest fears, and it still exists to this day, is going fast on a bike. It's a scary feeling of being out of control. And, you know, I know a lot of us train indoors because it's so safe and it's time effective and you get in the quality and there's no wasted time. But there's something about, you know, going outside and riding your bike that it cannot be simulated indoors. And so still to this day, I have to remind myself to get out there, to not just ride my bike, but to ride my bike going fast. So I am mentally and physically used to that feeling of taking corners fast, of drinking when I'm going fast. So that's something that still gets me to this day. What about you?
Well, it's going to come as a surprise, but creatures in the open water. I know it's a legit concern of mine, but here's the thing. For me to go to open water and swim in there and play around in there, fine. Not really my thing, but fine. I have to do it because of triathlon. But when I'm in a race situation and the gun goes off, I don't even think about it. But that, right. I only share that because that's years and years and years of mental preparation to do that. I cried. I cried. Nobody knows this, but I mean, I cried in my first open water swims because it was, to me, yes, I grew up as a swimmer, but you remember I'm in a protected lane. The precision and the cleanliness of the pools drives pool swimmers like me. I have no interest in these open water swims where people are touching me and I can see fish. And then you have to read about the sharks or you have to read about the snakes before you get in the swim. Like all that when I was younger and less experienced would freak me out. So I really had to get over my fears. I am here to say that after 25 or 30 years, I'm fine. It just takes a little bit of time.
It takes time.
I'm fine, but you know, it's a big deal.
It is. And I completely glossed over every single panic attack that I had in the open water. And I've been pulled out of the open water in a race. I'll never forget. It used to be called Mrs. T's back in the day. Oh. I had a complete panic attack. And the thing about Mrs. T's is you are in a protected harbor in Lake Michigan against the seawall. So it's not like you're out in the middle of Lake Michigan, but I just could not handle the chaos and the chop. And so I just had a couple people just kind of put my arms up and they pulled me out. I've been rescued in a boat. So these things happen. And when these things happen, you know, the only way to get over them is to keep going through them. And so to keep putting yourself back out there on the start line, to find some opportunities to practice and training, to go through it with friends, to not let that fear prevent you from doing what you want to do. So I think that open water thing will really resonate with a lot of people. What else? Were there any other like totally random fears you had out there in addition to creatures and going fast?
Yeah, you know, this might sound kind of trite, but I was actually kind of worried a lot about being a little bit of a type A rule follower. I was actually worried about knowing all the rules when I started. I know all the rules now and I teach people the rules of triathlon, but there's a lot of rules in triathlon. You know, you can't drop something on the bike or in transition. And let me preface this by saying I should probably step back. This is not for most of the local races that we're doing, but a lot of the races that we do, especially the long stuff, there's rules of how to draft and how to pass, or how not to draft and how to pass on the bike. And when I first started, I just felt like I was like an IndyCar driver, and I was riding my bike. Obviously, I wasn't going that fast, but I was riding my bike. Somebody would come by me, and then somebody would come by me on my right and then on my left, and I didn't know how to pass people. And so I spent a lot of time. And in those days, nobody could tell us that. There weren't all these triathlon coaches. There weren't all these experts in triathlon. So I just had to figure out how to ride my bike, kind of like Elizabeth, without the fear, how to handle my bike, how to turn, how to stop. Because at the end of the day, I was on a road. We were all on roads. And while they say it's a closed road, it's never a closed road. So I always had this fear of actually crashing or getting hit. So I had to just work on my confidence with that. What about you? Yeah.
Well, I would say one more, and this is me thinking of myself in more recent years than in the early years, because actually talking through some of those early adventures reminds me of how this new fear wasn't even a thing. But I think as we get deeper into anything and we take it seriously and we set goals and achieve goals, we start to have the fear of falling short of ourselves or disappointing ourselves, not meeting our expectations, not performing up to our potential. And so, you know, I think that that's something after so many years, I still struggle with when I get to the start line, and then especially once I cross the finish line. But just reminding myself of that sense of adventure that drew me into the sport and the freedom from not really knowing what was a good time or what was fast, or, and none of that even mattered. None of that got me hooked on the sport in the first place. It was just about community or just doing something fun on the weekend or visiting a new place. And so, you know, that's why, and Jen, we've traveled recently to races where I think it's really important to not take it all so seriously. Like, you can have goals, but still, like, we were in California in December, and we still took the time to enjoy ourselves and to go walking and to, you know, to have a glass of wine, and just to not take it so seriously, just to remind yourself to have fun out there. That's one of my fears, is just forgetting that.
Yeah. And that's actually a great, it kind of goes with that, the comparison, you know, mm-hmm. issue, where we compare ourselves to our old selves, you and I as mature triathletes. Now we compare ourselves to our old selves. And then some of you guys getting into triathlon, comparing yourselves to all your friends and friends that either have been in triathlon for a long time and are, you know, have been successful at triathlon, or friends that are just able to do more because they don't have little kids at home, or they don't have a job that requires the commitment that you have. And I think if you stay in your own lane in triathlon, it's really the best thing. It's like that for any sport, but I find in triathlon, it's almost like this juggling act, and there's never, ever, ever a real balance in triathlon. And it's a facade. People say, oh, I'm balanced, I got everything under control. It's total crap, because whether you've got kids at home, you just enter different phases of your life. You know, like Elizabeth has three little kids at home. So she's probably running around like a chicken with her head cut off at this stage in her life, running a business, husband, kids, everything else, training. And then, you know, someone like me who has, my kids are in college now, life is a lot different for me now than it was with that. So I think just being respectful of where you're at and what you can commit to, and be content with that, I think is a really important thing to remember.
Yeah. And that's a nice segue into our next topic, which will be, how do you know when it's time? Let's say you've done the sprint, the Olympic, maybe even the half Ironman. How do you know when it's time to do the big one, which is the Ironman, which I would imagine feels a lot like when runners think to themselves, when is it time to do the marathon? So, and an Ironman has that marathon in it. So when is it time to add 112 miles on the bike and 2.4 miles of swimming? So Jen, let's go back to your first Ironman. How did you know it was time? Tell us about it.
My story is a little bit different. So I'll try to put a spin on it. I did a half Ironman in Maryland. And in those days, you qualified at the half Ironman for the Ironman World Championships. So that's a little bit of a, that's a little aggressive. I'm here to tell you though, that was in 2004. My twins were two. I had no business doing an Ironman. So when I got the qualification, I really had to think about it. We had some time to think about it. I called my current coach at the time. And I was in, it talked to my husband and I'm like, I cannot do this. And keep in mind, it was June and the Ironman was in October. So it was something where I had to make a decision and then I had to get home and start training. So I actually did take the spot. I did go to Ironman Hawaii that year and race, but the entire time I was like a bug with my eyes shooting out of my sockets every single day. I was petrified. We didn't really know what we were doing training wise. We didn't even have Garmin's back in those in 04. We had watches, but no Garmin's. I had a road bike at the time, and you cannot go to Ironman Hawaii with 50 mile an hour winds in a road bike. So I had to get a new bike. So I was kind of baptized into Ironman very quickly, but it was time. It was 11 years after I started the sport. So I felt like I had enough of a background to do it. So what was your first Ironman? I don't know if I can remember. Was it?
Mine was in 2006. Was similar it Texas? Story. No.
Oh no, you did Kona with me in 06.
Yes. Similar story. But I will tell you that it took me 7 years to even get to the point where I was no longer scared enough to try to go to an Ironman. Because like Jen said, back then you could go to a 70.3, select one around the country. You just had to be able to win the whole thing or win your age group and you could get a slot to Kona. And so I didn't feel like that was even a good idea for me until I had been in the sport a while. And I actually think that was probably one of the most forward-thinking decisions I've ever made in the sport was I do think, you know, while we've said that it's very easy to prepare for a sprint Olympic and a half Ironman in a shorter period of time, once you're talking about the Ironman, for most people, we're talking 12 to 17 hours. And you can certainly go out and do it on limited preparation. But I always think to myself with those people, and I've had plenty couch to Ironman athletes, I always think to myself, are they going to enjoy it enough that they want to do it again? And are they not going to hurt themselves in the process because they were underprepared? So it took me a few years to really get to the point where I felt like this might be a reasonable idea. And still, so I went to Buffalo Springs, I won my age group. And at that point, it was Jerry McNeil. You're up on stage and he asks you if you want to go to Kona. I'm looking out. There's Natasha Badman in the audience because she had won the race that year. And you had to say yes then. And I'll never forget, I went to bed that night. I woke up in the middle of the night and I just had this feeling of, what have I done? Yes. Like that feeling after you get a haircut and it's a bad haircut and you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, whoa, what have I done? But yeah, like you, I had not too much time to prepare for it. And I did it and I went into it with totally realistic expectations of let's just finish this. Let's finish it alive. Let's not hurt ourselves. Let's just, and I remember talking to veterans of it and they said, you just got to go easy, go easier than you want to go, drink more than you want to drink and just take it all in. And I did. And I had the most awesome experience. And that's why I wanted to do it again the next year.
Well, that's yeah, you did. And that's what happens. You like it, you keep doing it. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you're like, you're in this pattern. What do you think was the biggest shock? Because I had a lot of shocks when I went from 70.3 to Ironman. What was the biggest shock after you did Buffalo Springs and not Kona necessarily as a race, mm-hmm. because there's all those shocks, but as an Ironman?
How much time you had to spend on the bike. You really, and this is not to scare people away from training, but you really do yourself a disservice if you don't put the time in on the bike. So you really need to have 3 to 4 weekends in the span of the 4 months before the race where you can commit 6, maybe 7
You can
hours?
Say 7. Yeah.
Yeah. 6 to 7 hours to just be on there, out there on your bike. And that's hard to do by yourself. So you really need to have that community, a friend, an organized ride just for the safety of it. And so you don't find yourself, which I have many times found myself in a ditch on the side of the road, looking at the corn, thinking, how am I going to pedal my bike back because I'm over this? So, you know, that's what was the biggest shock to me. What about for you?
By far, 100%. Aside from the elements of being outside in the heat and stuff that freaked me out, was the nutrition. Was the nutrition.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was just so used to being able to, now keep in mind too, when you're listening to this, everybody, Elizabeth and I were in our 30s when we were doing this. So you, as the decades go on, you have less and less wiggle room with everything. And that includes your nutrition. I can remember not really knowing what to eat and drink on the bike, but managing it well enough to do well enough at the 70.3. You can't fake the Ironman. So I remember clawing my way at mile 18 of the run, jumping into the Port-a-John, because not because I had GI issues, I actually didn't have GI issues, but because I didn't drink enough and peeing dark brown, realizing at mile 18 of the marathon of an Ironman at 1,000.2 degrees that I'm in big trouble and I had to figure out how to get back to the finish line. So I underestimated the fueling and hydration requirements, one for a hot race, which was is stupid of me, but number two, just of that length. And that's why we spend so much time talking about it now.
It is. It's a big part of it. But thinking of the marathon, I guess that was another thing that surprised me, because I had done one open marathon prior to doing an Ironman. And I did this race with my husband, who his only goal was to break 4 hours. And I was like, I mean, we were boyfriend, girlfriend at the time. So I was like, oh, fine, I'll run this stupid thing with you. And I was out there and I thought to myself, why do people do this? They look miserable. And we did Chicago. But anyway, I still, even though it wasn't, I would say, fast or hard at the time for us, it still wasn't a whole lot of fun. But I remember the Ironman and marathon, it was surprisingly more fun and not as hard as that felt on the body. And I think people always think, wow, I have to run a marathon. To me, yes. That's almost, it's almost the easiest part of the day, because the swim is the swim. And depending on where you're swimming, it's always like, wow, that's like 2.4 miles is a long time to swim. And, mm-hmm. you know, other people are around you. And then the bike is just a long time to be out on the bike. But then once you get to the marathon, I think to myself, oh, I can finally breathe a sigh of relief. You know, I'm safe. My feet are on the ground and yes. I just have to run or walk my way to the finish line.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that's one of the things too, is that you're just kind of relieved to get off the bike in an Ironman. And everybody has the most confidence in the run as long as you fuel well. Yeah. I was there in 06 with you. I forgot that. We did that together.
Yes. Yes. And my husband did it as well. So you were there with your husband. I was
there. And Jerome did too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that. Well, so many fun memories. So we've talked about the gear. We've talked about how do you know when it's time to step up? Do you feel like people, like let's say somebody's not all in on triathlon, do you feel like they could mix the triathlon training with the run training, whether they're training for a half marathon or a marathon?
Absolutely, unless we're speaking of the Ironman. Then I think you have to be a little bit more all in. So for example, it is very relatively easy with some tweaks and some help from coaching and coaches to do a sprint Olympic and even a half Ironman and still train for half marathon and train for a marathon. Elizabeth and I weave that in successfully with athletes all the time. And so that is something you just kind of have to bump up the runs a little bit more, but the cross training tends to lend itself very, very well to both sports. The running, you create a bigger engine with the swimming and the cycling, and with the Ironman, obviously you're just doing more stuff that helps you.
Yeah. I find people are surprised by how much the swim and bike fitness spill over into running. And some of my, you know, triathletes who go to do marathons and we do a marathon specific, I feel like sometimes they run better if they keep enough of that swimming and biking in there. I'm thinking of Gwen Jorgensen, who was the 2016 gold medalist in the triathlon. She made the switch over to running and she never really went beyond her triathlon run performances, even though she was solely focusing on the marathon and ultimately the 10K distance. It was something about that, maybe the load or, you know, just the engine building from the swimming and the biking that really helped to elevate her run performances.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, she comes obviously from a run and swim background, but there is nothing better than good swimmers being able to maintain their fitness through swimming, like when they get injured or something. So I know one of the concerns that people have about starting triathlon is the swim. I think most people don't have that concern about the bike. And so it kind of goes back to our earlier point of taking a swim lesson, getting comfortable in the swim, just playing in the pool. Like if anyone listening has access to a pool, community pool, a pool in your backyard, and just getting in there with kids or with yourself and just kind of playing like we were kids in the pool, that just creates comfort and confidence in the water that does lead over to triathlon, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you feel like the swimming is a barrier, I feel like every town these days has a pool triathlon. And that is a nice entry point for many people. You're in the pool, you can see the bottom, there's a lane line, you can put your feet down when you get scared. Sometimes they'll throw a noodle at you to help you out. And so if you feel like, I want to get a taste of triathlon, I'm not ready to go into the big bad lake yet, which there are no sharks in the lakes, let's be clear.
Mm-hmm.
Then start with that pool swim. And if you're interested, I believe we're doing a webinar with Dimity coming up on triathlon for the AMR community. So we have that coming up. Mm-hmm. But Jen, before we say goodbye to the listeners today, and this was a lot of fun being alone here and being able to chat without anyone without the parents.
Without the parents. I know. We did behave.
But I can't
wait for your question.
So before we go, anything in all the years you've done triathlon, a good 50 years at this point, any funny memories, any like, wow, I can't believe someone said that to me, or I can't believe that happened.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. I mean, I have so many stories. I mean, I just have stories of like forgetting my shoes in transition at the national championships at some super fast race or getting on my bike. I have fallen off my bike, falling off my bike, with people watching. Nobody really cares but you, but still you're embarrassed. You know, and I have people say to me all the time now that I'm older stuff that you're like, that probably shouldn't come out of your mouth, you know, stuff like, oh, I can't believe how, whatever, fast you are, you know, and they look at me and I'm like their mom's age. You know, I get a lot of that, but nothing, I don't have any triathlon fun stories of me like doing anything really stupid. One of the things is I can't believe after all these years, I have never missed a start of a race, which when you race 200, 300 times in your career, that's pretty monumental. First of all, I never oversleep for anything, but I've never missed the start of a race. I've never, I forgot equipment. Like, you know, you show up at a race and you don't have your shoes, you don't have a helmet. So one of the things that I do is I carry almost two of everything. I've got more goggles than you guys all know what to do with because I'm obsessed. I have a little bit of a goggle problem. I wear, if anybody's listening going, well, what does she wear? I wear, and they're nothing fancy. I used to wear the Swedish goggles as a kid, but I don't do that anymore. So I wear Speedo women's vanquishers now, and I love them. I mean, like, I'm like one with my goggles. So I have forgotten equipment. I have two helmets in my car. If it's a local race, I have a pump. I carry everything. So I'm like Mrs. Uber prepared now. I'm like the grandma of the whole thing. Like, okay, everybody, I got everybody's, you know, when the race director gets on and says, hey, does anybody have any extra? And I'm like, I do. I got extra for everybody. What about you?
I've had my bike not show up to a race.
Oh, so yeah. I remember that.
Remember my husband had to fly down with my road bike. I had someone once come up to me after a race and say, gee, I thought you would be a lot taller and more blonde. And I thought, well, that's gotta be a huge disappointment for you. I'm 5'2" and dark haired. I was passing someone at probably mile 23 of the Kona marathon. And someone said, midgets, they're everywhere. She was not too happy that I was passing her. So anyhow, I've had,
midgets, they're
when everywhere. You walk around in this body, you get a lot of comments, but, you know, I guess before we leave the listeners, if anyone is interested in trying a triathlon, like we said, listen to our webinar coming up with Dimity. You can reach out to us anytime. Anything else before we go, Jen?
No, I'm just trying to think we should end with like, what is the number one piece of advice that we would have? Like if you could give a total beginner, never have done a triathlon, one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Stay patient. Just stay patient with yourself, with the process, with the progress, with other people out there. Just stay patient because nothing happens overnight. Everything takes time, and everyone out there, including yourself, is just doing the best they can.
Yeah, that's a great. And I would just add on, my piece of advice would be, like I kind of alluded to earlier, stay in your lane. I think with the introduction of all the kind of the data and the social media and some of that other stuff, we kind of get a little bit wrapped up in what everybody else is doing. And triathlon's not complicated if you just break it down into swim, bike, and run. So keep it simple and have fun. That's how I would kind of, that would be my advice.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye. Thanks everybody.
Barry's going to have to beep
Barry
all that out.
Barry can edit that out. It was just one time. I just swore once.